Good afternoon. This is Larry Schaefer again, and this is Humanities 294, Native American Religions. And this will be tape number three. And on this tape number three, I'd like to deal with some of the questions in assignment number two. A lot of you are getting in your first assignments. And for the most part, they're quite good. A few suggestions I might make is one is that you make sure you read the assignment thoroughly and don't really go beyond the assignment. For instance, one student used four outside readings to finish up the assignments. Well, some of the specific assignments ask for specific information from your required readings, and so outside readings were not really conducive to the right answers to these questions. Not that they were necessarily wrong, some weren't really appropriate for what I wanted. So just limit yourself to the questions at hand. Make sure that you understand the question and that you're satisfied with the answer. Now, a couple of questions I noticed some students got confused on. For instance, the one about personal power and impersonal power. A great many students got confused in it. Some didn't, but I think more did than didn't. Make sure that you understand yourself what you mean, so that if I were to ask you about it and we were going to discuss it, you could defend your position, what you mean by personal power. And I thought a great many of these assignments were quite weak on especially that one question on personal power. So make sure that you're satisfied with the answers you write. If you're just trying to answer the question to get something down to send to me, you're wasting my time and your time, and let me know if that's what you're doing. These things hopefully are designed to give you some feeling and some sense of Native American religion from a number of different perspectives, and this is one perspective. Obviously, it's not the perspective of a practitioner or anything. So, but this is the course, and this is what we have to live with. So, I'll kind of go through these questions here on the second assignment, and we'll see if we can't circumvent these problems that some students had with the first assignments. But like I said, for the most part, these first assignments were really good. Okay, basically what I wanted to do with this, the first assignment tended to deal with sociological and anthropological an approach to religion. And this approach, this question, hopefully is going to help you deal, or I want you to deal with the relationship of religion to the natural and social environments. And what I mean by environment is the natural surroundings. And again, this is the climate, the fauna, the flora, the geology, whatever, plus man. So the natural surroundings plus man, that's what produces an environment. So man affects his natural surroundings, and natural surroundings affect man. I mean, that's obvious. So man's social structure and religious structure very often reflects these influences of the natural environment. And this is what I want us to kind of look at through this assignment. For the American Indians, especially religion, was closely bound up with the natural environment because their whole life was bound up with the natural environment. There was an inseparable relationship there. And I think that all of the readings we come to speaks to this very issue. Native American religion reflected the natural social environment in which it functioned. So we can look at the religion and it'll tell us an awful lot about a lot of other things about the society as well. Underhill gives an example of different environments when she gets into that. She gives us the Northwest Coast Plains, Southeast Indians, and the Southwest Indians. She talks about an awful lot of Indians in here, and it gives some real neat examples to give you the broad spectrum of the various degrees of relationship the religious structure has with the natural environment. Okay, let's take a look at this first question and see what it says here. Okay, war ceremonies were different for many Indian groups. Right, this difference had to do with the environment the Indians lived in. Some of these differences had to do, right. So in a short essay, discuss the main differences between Indian group war ceremonies and how these differences might be related to the environment. Okay, well, again, this is where she, in this, on her chapter on the war ceremonies, she talks about the Northwest Coast and the Plains Indians, and the Southeast Planning Indians, and then the Indians in the Southwest, the Pima, Papago, Hopi, Zuni, and so forth. And she pointed out that each of these had a different perception of war and what war was all about. For instance, and as we all know, our, that we're probably all familiar with, the Plains Indians, war was a very important part of their whole social structure. They had societies built on it, their leaders were built upon on it, their activities, their hunting, the religion, everything was somehow or another related to warfare for the Plains Indians. And it had reached a very, very high state. In fact, it became very formalized. And by warfare, I don't mean that they had these huge battles where Indians would go out killing each other off and this kind of thing. I mentioned this before. Those of you that are familiar with the coup, counting coup, this is the take an honor in a battle, is the greatest honor you can take in a battle is to ride in and touch your enemy with a stick, not a spear, or not kill him or anything else, but to ride in and touch a live enemy and ride back out. And those men that did this were highly honored. And so the object was not necessarily to slaughter whole populations of people, but to gain individual honor through various deeds, which didn't even include killing. Of course, there was the killing. And on the other hand, she talks about the planters, the Zuni, Hopi, whatever, who disliked war very much. And they thought the only people who waged war were sorcerers and witches. And that was their words for the Apache and the Navajo who raided and warred against these more peaceful planting Indians. If we look at the social organization and the natural surroundings, we can see that the natural surroundings may have had influences on these different perceptions of war. These differences of opinion or differences of perception of war were manifested in the ceremonies. And she gets into that in detail. She talks about the Plains Indian ceremonies, and she talks about how different the planter ceremonies were from the Plains Indians and other more warlike tribes, and she deals somewhat with the reasons for that. So what I'd like you to do is to look at that chapter and some of the information from the other chapters and write a page discussing the relationship of the war ceremonies and the warring tribes and non-warring tribes and the differences between them and how these differences might be related to the environment. Okay, let's look at the second question then. Briefly describe in another page the relationships of the Sundance to the natural and social environment of the Plains Indians. Okay. Now, there's a chapter in there on both their books on the Sundance, and even in Deloria, he talks about the Sundance some. Now, what is the relationship there of the environment to the Sundance? Okay, well, let me just briefly run through a couple of things here to give you an idea of what I'm looking for. For instance, when the Indians come on the plains of the horses, as Underhill talks about, the ability to kill buffalo whenever they wanted and to travel great distances and stuff, and this having access to this transportation and this meat, this food, allowed many people to stay together for a long time. So the larger bands or the tribes could come together and have these ceremonies and perform these ceremonies for themselves and the natural environment supplied the sustenance for them to do so. Basically, for the Plains Indian stuff, the Sundance, there was no permanent temple or paraphernalia. And this is to do large part for the mode of living that the Plains Indians had. They traveled a lot. They packed on their back and on their horses and with their dogs what they owned. And the nature of the buffalo and other game required that they traveled like this, so that there was no way they could really have a permanent temple or paraphernalia or so forth for these ceremonies. And because of the warfare system as well, there were probably chances that if they went back to the same place continually, they could be set up for an ambush or whatever. There was no organized priesthood for the most part. Various people oftentimes took upon themselves the responsibility of setting up a Sundance and became a sponsor for one. Again, this is necessary for a wandering people, this kind of loosely organized priesthood. This is an example of the natural environment, the large plains area that had to be, and the large areas that had to be conveyed to get to food from one spot to the other. There was no chance of just sitting in one spot. So this forced a certain type of religious social organization upon the people if they were going to live in this kind of environment. So this relates directly to the natural environment, the natural surroundings. I talked about war, and in these, most of the ceremonies, the warriors had very important parts of the ceremony, and probably great part of these ceremonies were designed to give safety and courage and so forth to the warrior groups. But these warriors had very important functions in the warrior societies and so forth. And this, I guess, would be an example of a reflection of the social environment and how the religious structure is related to the social environment. But as the environment changed and as modern times came on, the ceremony goals changed too. And I think Underhill talks about this, and I think as does DeLoria. But instead of, the buffalo, of course, had the was one of the main points of this Sundance, and the return of the buffalo and the blessing of the buffalo. And almost all the tribal groups did this. But as this changed and the buffalo were eliminated, so instead of a buffalo blessing, a general blessing became the goal of the Sundance ceremony. And this is probably more or less what it is today and has been ever since the end of the buffalo, is a general blessing of the people. So again, this shows the relationship that the environment changes and the ceremonies and goals of the ceremonies also change to accommodate the changing environment. Black Elk, in the book Black Elk, has a number of things to say about the Sundance and its relationship to Sioux life as he knows it. So read that and use some of his information in your answers too. I think it would help boost it up a little bit. Well, the third question, C, it says, briefly summarize two common elements found in the religions of Indian groups that practice agriculture. This should be a one or two page essay again. Okay, let me just give you an example of some of the things I'm talking about, and I just got a list of them here that I'll just kind of run through, and you can either use these or others. I'd like to see you use these in a... Now, when I say summarize the common elements, let me give you an example. Is the role of women in agriculture is different from that in societies that have no agriculture. They have certain roles, certain functions because they're women. Again, this refers somewhat back to the chapter of women's power, this impersonal power one has because she is a woman. And because of the fertility of women giving birth and the earth giving birth, and the earth is mostly referred to as the mother by American Indian, Mother Earth. So there is a relationship, and the various planning groups utilize women in various ways, but there is a common thread in their relationship to the planting and the caring of the gardens and so forth. Common element found in religions and agriculture is the process of purification, of eliminating contamination through either physical contamination or mental contamination or spiritual contamination. Everything had to be renewed. There seemed to be a lot of Thanksgiving ceremonies in Indians who practice agriculture, planting Indians and so forth. There was a big emphasis, as one might obviously suspect, on the seasons, which, as we all know, is really important to people who plant. The climate, rain, this kind of thing. These are some common elements found in the religious structure of most planting Indian groups. Another one that seems to be significant and stands out significantly, at least according to Underhill, is the phenomena of sacrifice. Now, most tribes seem to have some form of sacrifice to renew the earth and renew the system that they belong to. And this sacrifice goes from one extreme to the other, from the sacrificing of human lives to the smoking of tobacco. And there's a whole range of different sacrifices in between there. But the sacrifice itself seems to be a common element in a lot of these religions. Another thing that seems to stand out as compared to non-planting Indians and the warring tribes and so forth is the complexity of the ceremonies and the complexity of the religious social organization. They seem to be much more complex, much more sophisticated than do the ceremonies of the Plains Indians and other groups, that warrior groups and hunting groups that weren't engaged in agriculture. So these are just a few that I jotted down that I thought about, that I picked out, and I'm sure there are more. And again, I want you to do more than just jot these down. I want you to summarize them. I want you to tell me what you think about them and come up with some kind of insights on these traits or phenomena that run through most of the religious systems of the Indians that practice planting and agriculture. Well, there's one more we can take a look at here. It says, the last one, D, it says, give 3 or 4 brief examples of how the natural environment influenced religion among the Sioux. Okay. In Underhill's book, she discusses the Sioux Indians quite a bit. Now, if you want to pick the stuff out specifically about the Sioux, go back to the index, pick out all the pages under Sioux and look it up. And then, of course, Black Elk Speaks, whole book is about the Sioux Indian and its relationship, and he has many, many examples of the natural environment and its relationship to religion among the Sioux people. And some of it is very explicit that he talks about, and some of it's very implicit. But that is, you have to kind of read between the lines and analyze what he's saying and come up with the exact relationship. I would like to see some specific examples from Black Elk. I guess you could say that Underhill provides some description and theory of Plains culture and religion, and Black Elk gives us a specific example of how this theory and so forth was manifested in an actual system. So I'll be looking at the relevancy of your examples pulled from the Black Elk book and how you deal with it for this assignment. Again, this is about a page. When I say give three or four brief examples, one paragraph, that's about one paragraph each for each example is what I mean, in case you're concerned about that. So that D would be about one full page, I would imagine. Again, three or four are plenty, and there are many more examples that are in that book and available to you, but three or four is sufficient, and I'd rather have you deal with just a couple of them in depth rather than just list a whole bunch of them. Well, that's about it for this one. You've got one more tape coming. It'll be out here in about another month, 3 weeks. I'll try to get it out by the middle of April. And this will be on God is Red and those chapters you have to read in God is Red. How is everyone doing so far with this course? I'd be curious to hear your responses to it, if you're happy with it or really disgusted with it or find it a pain in the neck or whatever. If I get this kind of feedback, it helps me, you know, so that I know where I'm going with it next time or even this time if I'm getting way off on the wrong track. From my assignments I've gotten so far, I've been pretty pleased. A couple of students have done marginally, but for the most part, students have done very well. There's been one or two questions that no one's really gotten them wrong. There's just been a little bit of confusion on it, and I think if we discussed it, it would clear it up. And when those people that were a little weak on that one question I mentioned, I think I tried to explain what I meant by personal power and impersonal power and what the difference was. If you have real problems with this, be sure and see your field coordinators. They should be able to help you. I know that sometimes it's difficult for us to get around as much as we're supposed to, as much as we'd like to, but we do the best we can. And, you know, I'm not that big of a hurry for these assignments, so if you're not sure of the question or you're not sure that you understand it, if you can't write to me about it, just hang on till you see your field coordinator or see me or make sure that you know what you're doing before you write your assignment. And if you do that, I can't see where you have any problems at all. Secondly, I don't see where you have any problems if you do the reading. Now, some of the assignments or some of the answers I get, I strongly suspect that the reading was not done because many of the answers are right in the book. I mean, you could copy the paragraph out of the book and you'd get the right answer. But some people tried to, I guess you might say, try to be it. And, you know, if you can put it in different words or you can talk about it yourself, that's great. I'm not telling you not to do that, as long as you are dealing with the question that I asked for. And some people indeed did do that from other sources and so forth and wrote some very good answers. Other people tried, I guess for lack of better words, tried to BS it, and they did very poorly. So you do whatever you feel like. Well, that's about all for this tape. Maybe I'll see some of you. I'm going to Fairbanks tonight. This is the 16th. I'm going in for the dog races. Maybe I'll see you there this weekend. If I do, I'll tell you there that this tape is out and let you know where the problems seem to be as far as I'm concerned with this course so far. And there's not many. It's just a matter of just a few little ones. Anyway, please feel free to holler back and give me hell if you don't think this course is meeting your needs, or if you think it should be changed, or if it's too hard or too simple or not enough reading or too much reading, because I really need this information. You know, don't be afraid to be critical, and also don't be afraid to be complimentary if that's the case. But the more I know about your feelings about this course and whether it's good or bad, the better a job I can do for you and for the other students. Okay, well, that's it. My plane's going to be leaving in about 2 hours. I better get home and pack, and I hope I see some of you in Fairbanks. And I'll be expecting the second assignment pretty quick now. And good luck until next time. We'll see you later.